Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of the Personal Wealth Coach, second hour on this Saturday, May 30th, the last day of May in the year of our Lord 2015. It's interesting, May 2015 will never come again. It's gone. It will be gone as of midnight. Well, actually, it will be gone as of 6 p.m. officially. Now, it will still linger in its death throes for about 12 more hours. But
so, explain this again?
Well, universal coordinated time.
Uh-huh.
The day change occurs at about, actually, 7 p.m. locally, but it should be 6. But because of daylight savings time, it's 7.
The people of humanity, humans in particular, get all wrapped up around breaking records and about, you know, numbers that line up in a certain way.
Right.
And they look at me rather funnily, because
funnily, that's funnily. Another. Oh, there we go. We got funnily,
shrinkle and funnily
are both coined today.
They look at me rather funnily because at midnight, if I'm up and about, when midnight happens, I generally will say something to the effect of "Happy New Day." Because if you're going to do it at the end of the year, might as well do it at the end of the day.
Actually,
and the fact is that the 8th minute of the 11th hour of the 30th day of May in 2015 is about to pass, and it's never going to be seen again.
Did you actually see it?
Well, yes, I'm looking at it. It's on a clock.
Oh.
That's the representation of that minute.
Well, actually, you could
play, when it's gone,
you could play black back the clock.
Right. It's going to be gone
forever. Right.
So this
concept, never be here again.
People say things like, this is the last time that this planet is going to be aligned with that planet or for this period of time. I'm like, yeah, this is the last time. We'll see the second that just passed forever. It will never happen again. That was one. Did you enjoy it? Because it's gone now.
That's right. Well, actually, it's 7 p.m. Central Daylight Time is when the day ends.
According to the moon.
No. Universal coordinated time. That means throughout the entire universe,
coordinated,
with the exception of one half of the planet Earth. And if you're on daylight savings time, it's not quite a half.
So if you're looking at any star in the universe, it's being measured, at least by us, in universal coordinated time.
That's right.
But most of the planet is not. So the planet needs to get with the Brits.
Right.
And
so
we need to understand that time is actually Britain-centric.
Actually, it's not just British. You have to be. It's also in Liberia. So.
Oh, yeah. Liberia as well. That nice
because
line.
Because they're just north-south right through each other. But the point is that if the entire universe, which is somewhat larger than the Earth.
Slightly.
Right.
Yes.
If in the entire universe, the day changes at a given moment, the fact that it hasn't quite got here yet is insignificant. When you consider that only a very small portion of the Earth, then it remains in the previous day.
Yes, I
then
think it's very...
The proper date is universal coordinated time.
It's amazingly arrogant that we measure the rest of the universe based on the time it takes us to travel around our particular star.
Why?
It's the light years. Well, a year is what? If we ever talk to aliens and they show up and they say, how many light years away are you? And they're going to be going, do what?
Well, I said that several occasions yesterday. The people said, well, where are you? And I said, I'm right here.
This is very obvious that I'm standing in front
say,
of you.
What town are you in? I said, Austin.
You were in Austin.
Your office is in Austin? No, I'm in Austin. Or I would say to somebody, or somebody would say, well, I'm in Boston.
It's a lot easier to speak with us when we're on the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually,
in person, we're strange.
Yes. Well, actually, some people think we're strange on the radio. Anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone number's in here. If you are in East Bell County, well, actually, you could use the number anywhere. You could put 1-254 in front of it, but it's 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we were going to talk about the Grexit.
Yes. The Greek exit from the European monetary group.
Union, the European Monetary Union.
It is the Euro zone.
The
zone.
Easy. It's the easy.
The easy zone, or that would be easy.
The big easy.
The big easy. New Orleans across with euros.
Yes.
Right.
And why it's significant. We've talked about this before, and there have been several actual articles in the Wall Street Journal and other places. One, I guess it was in the Financial Times and in The Economist. I've seen the articles. In the Eurozone, institutions are allowed and even required to carry sovereign debt of any member of the Eurozone at face value on their books. They can't discount it. In other words, if you're a bank, if you're running a bank, or if you're running a major insurance company or something, and you're required to have by law certain reserves,
right,
that you hold against the money that you loan out or the money you commit yourself to in annuity contracts and things of that nature. And those reserves are required to be risk-free debt. For example, a U.S. Treasury bond is considered to be risk-free for all intents and purposes. If you have a 10-year U.S. Treasury bond, even though there will be inflation and the buying power of the dollars you may get back in 10 years may be less, if you have a $1,000 10-year Treasury bond, and 10 years from now there is considered to be effectively zero risk that you will not get back $10,000, whatever they may be worth at the time. And so those are considered to be risk-free, and if they're properly laddered according to the risk, and I mean, it gets a little bit complicated here.
Anytime you bring a ladder to a right. bond, it's
That's
a little
right.
strange.
So if you've properly structured the portfolio and everything, you're considered to have covered your obligations, and so if everything really messes up to the very, very large degree that it easily can in the real world, then you have enough money to probably cover the bad stuff. Now, the problem is that the law in Europe allows and requires, for example, large insurance companies to carry Greek sovereign debt at face value. So if they have 1,000 euros worth a bond for 1,000 euros of Greek debt that's supposed to mature in 5 years or 10 years, the banks and insurance companies, and more specifically the insurance companies, are carrying those Greek bonds on their books as reserves at full value. Now, they have been discounted to the degree in their stock prices and in their behavior and everything else that 10 years from now they know they probably won't get back anything.
Right.
Or they may get back something.
This is a fascinating piece. The Greeks have already defaulted on some of their debt hold at high amount.
Technically, they did not default.
Well,
they reached an agreement with every major creditor to write down that debt, specific bonds they had issued, by a certain percentage. And if everybody agrees, then it's not a default.
Okay. That may be true when we're talking about Greek bonds. But if you own a house and you have a mortgage,
mm-hmm.
and you go to the bank and you say, this mortgage is too much for me, I'm going to fail to pay you, let's renegotiate. They renegotiate with you. Everybody involved agrees. Yes, this is wonderful. We've renegotiated. The bank's
right.
not so happy because they're getting less money than they wanted. You're not so happy because it's not totally no payments.
Uh-huh.
And it shows up on your credit record for 7 years.
It may not
a default, but pretty close to it. Where
right.
the Greeks...
But it's not a default.
The Greeks didn't default, but they're pretty close to it, and it doesn't
right.
show up anywhere. It's, it shows up, but the law says that a Greek bond can sit next to a German bond at a bank and be treated the same way.
It's kind of like if you owe money on a credit card and you transfer it to another credit card issuer,
right,
and they agree to forego giving you a bonus to transfer it, which, by the way,
yeah.
does go on.
Yeah, it's true. I got $400.
They give you a bonus. In other words, they basically said, we will forgive $400 of that debt, a partial forgiveness. It doesn't go on your credit record. It's a bad deal.
Right.
And that's from the perspective of what of the legalities and everything else that happened with Greece. They
that's
simply
kinda
said
what happened.
That's what they did. It's debt forgiveness, and it's debt forgiveness that theoretically was voluntarily done by the creditors.
And if you were one of the creditors, you probably didn't feel really good about
right.
that.
And
you
so,
got paid a lot less. You were promised money, and the Greeks said, well, we don't have the money, so will you take this? And they said, no. Well, how about this? No. Well, I'm not going to be able to pay you anything unless you take this. Oh, okay.
But the point is, it's happened.
Yes.
And those bonds, let's just say you had one of those bonds, if you're the bank or the insurance company, and you had one of those $1,000 bonds that got written down, let's say 30%, it's now you're carrying it on the books at $700.
I have a $700 bond for my $1,000.
But there are, and this is another one of those economic technical terms, a bunch of those bonds still out there of other bonds that are still being carried at $1,000. And even the ones that are carried at $700, if the Greeks leave the Eurozone, then the law that says that is AAA rated reserve no longer applies.
And it becomes
and
junk.
The Greeks effectively say, you're not getting back diddly squat. Another one of those economic
terms.
They
say, we will pay you back full face value in
drachma.
Which we're printing right now, just in case.
and so the point is, very frankly, I think in the inner circles of high finance, the central bank circles of people.
Opa is a bad word right now in central finance, yes.
Opa?
Opa, yes.
Wait,
it's a Greek celebration word.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was a German grandfather. But anyway, the point is that probably, including the Secretary of the Treasury of the United States, quite a few people are aware of just exactly how many bonds, how much value in bonds is being carried on the books of financial institutions in Europe right now, that if the Greeks leave, the fiction, the common fiction, by the way, that everybody seems to agree on, that the Greeks, when these things mature, will actually pay back the principal, is hokey. And they realize that the moment that the Greeks leave, they have to recognize the hokiness. By the way, it isn't really hokey, because let's just say, for the sake of argument here, that you have a $700 Greek sovereign bond that's going to mature in 2 years. It was $1,000, now it's $700.
Right.
Okay. In 2 years, the Greeks will simply approach you and say, let's roll that over into a new bond.
How about we refinance
at that? 16%. I mean, it's a 16. You probably have like a 4 or 5% bond at 700, and what we'll do is you just loan us that 700 again, and we'll pay you 16%. Because that's what's happening, by the way, as they refinance each time. The Greeks are capable of refinancing at absolutely absurd interest rates, and so nobody. It really boils down to the fact that everybody realizes that if anybody forces the Greeks to actually pay the principal on their debts, there's no money there to pay the principal.
And what's more?
And so they just refinance at ridiculously high interest rates, and the Greeks continue to pay the higher interest. But the
higher
problem
interest
is,
rate
right,
is slowing down their economy.
It's not just slowing down their economy. It's resulting in a negative cash flow.
Yeah, so they have to borrow more money pay the high interest rate on the money that they've already borrowed.
It's an inverse Ponzi scheme. That eventually,
but the money that they're borrowing to pay the high interest rate has an even higher interest rate than the money that they borrowed originally at the high interest rate.
Somehow, the idea is if you just keep rolling this over at higher interest rates,
maybe
forever,
it'll go away. It won't.
The Greeks will never have to pay it off, and that way we can just ignore it. But the fact is, their interest payments keep getting higher and higher and higher, and as
it's
their interest payments keep getting higher and higher, they have to lay more people off from the government and spend less money from the government because they don't have as much money because they're paying it at interest rates.
One of the things that they did is they laid off most of their tax collectors. They weren't collecting a whole lot of taxes anyway, but now they're collecting a lot less.
it's pretty fat. And the whole issue is, though,
we're having trouble collecting money here. Let's get rid of the people that collect money.
Instead of kicking the can down the road and hoping that somehow a miracle will occur and or Merkel will occur. Or
Merkel, yeah, Angela and, Merkel will yeah, occur,
and the Greek economy will suddenly recover and be able to pay off these
ruinous
debt that they owe to banks and insurance companies, particularly around the rest of Europe,
and the United States.
That what's happening, by the way, is the International Monetary Fund says the Greeks owe 300 million, which doesn't sound like a lot.
Well, that's more euros, than I have in my pocket.
Right, euros.
So I don't have that much in my pocket at the moment.
To the International Monetary Fund, that they and they don't have 300 million euros.
The fact that a government of a country that is considered to be cultured and renowned for its history and they don't have $300 million.
I'm sorry, it's $300 billion.
Yeah, I was going to say $300 billion. They don't have $300 billion.
Billion, million, you
yes,
know,
it's just
one
a
of those
one
words.
Letter difference. I mean, three zeros. Zeros are nothing anyway.
And then there's this little problem that's going on, though, that's compounding things, and that is that total bank deposits in Greece fell from 145 billion euros in March to 139.4 billion euros in April. And that's 5.6 billion euros that have fled Greece.
Let's just wait just a second here. All right. How much was the balance at the beginning there? Say that again.
Which balance? It was 145 billion euros dropped to 139.4.
That was the deposits in Greece.
But it isn't... Right, go ahead.
Okay,
right.
So deposits in Greek banks, $145 billion. So if you think about the people of Greece in Greece have money in their banks worth $145 billion, and that is all the money that they have in Greece. And the Greek government has to pay $300 billion to the International Monetary Fund. Where are they going to get it? See, the last time around, they took some of the money from the bank, from the depositors of the bank.
And I need to check that number because billion, I've got this billion million thing here, which is absurd right. That I can't.
The fact that 145 billion became 139 billion, that, you know, the number of trillions of dollars involved in the United States when you're talking about bank deposits is just really, really large numbers. And the idea that the Greeks owe more than their citizens have on deposit at the bank at the banks in Greece, and that they're taking the money out of the banks in Greece for very good reason. If I lived in Greece, I certainly wouldn't have my money in a Greek bank because the Greek banks have shown all they need to do to fix this is just take some money out of their depositors' accounts, and everything's better all of a sudden.
Well, the key thing here is that this is a deteriorating situation, and if it collapses, there will be a shock. Now, the good news about that is that I have to assume that there's an awful lot of people in high places who anticipate this shock coming. I mean, the chairman of the International Monetary Fund admitted that the Greeks could bail. By the way, every economist that I've read on the subject said the Greeks in the long term would be better off if they just bailed out of the Eurozone. In the short term, it would be horrendous.
Yeah. And the Greeks might short term, long term, get out of this not too difficultly. The problem isn't Greece. We mentioned that Greece as a GDP of the Eurozone is such a tiny fraction that it is less than a storm event to the Eurozone. If a big storm hits the Eurozone, it's going to have a bigger impact on their economy than the Greeks have just by existing. So what's the problem? And the problem is that a lot of those banks and insurance companies, which have Greek debt, that is, they've been saying, "All right, they're."
I'm sorry. It's 304 million euros. I was right the
right,
first time.
Million.
It's only 304 million euros.
I believe that more because of the 139 39 billion.
So 304 million euros, which
it's not a lot of money, but it is a lot of money when you don't have it.
It's like six battalions. No, not six. About four battalions of tanks sitting on Fort Hood.
And yeah, it's just really not.
It's
I'm
not,
not sure
a
it's
significant
that.
Amount of money.
It's we have,
but they don't have it.
We have a stealth bomber that is three times the value of what they owe. One stealth bomber is three times the value of what
and
they
so
owe.
And so the tininess of the Greek economy compared to the Eurozone is I mean, the Greek economy is an insignificant burp.
However, if they fail, if they leave the Eurozone, it leaves the door that doesn't even exist right now.
It creates a door.
The building has no doors right now. You can't leave.
You can get in, but you can't. It's the Hotel California.
Right. And if the
Greeks... You can check out, but you can't leave.
If the Greeks leave, then what's to keep Spain or Italy from leaving? Because they have some pretty big debts, too. But that's not really the scary part. The scary part is what if France or Germany says, forget this stuff. We're supporting all these people that aren't able to support themselves. We're leaving. Well, that makes the entire Eurozone collapse. Because they are resting on the shoulders of the big northern European economies that are using the euros.
And
if those economies leave, because if the Greeks can do it, why can't the Germans? If the southern Europeans are using the credit rating of the northern Europeans, and the northern Europeans are saying, hey, wait a minute. It's kind of like if you lived in an apartment complex and everybody in the apartment complex agreed to get loans in the same application process, and there's four people in the place that have a really, really good job, and there's 20 people in the place that have okay jobs, and there's about 10 people in the place that have horrible jobs that are losing money, not making money, why would those four people want to stay? And in this case, we're talking about Germany and France, and the Brits didn't want to get involved. They said, forget that. I'm not getting involved. We're not sharing our credit rating, the strength of our currency, with the Italians or with the Spanish or with the...
Who did you say didn't get involved?
The Brits, the UK.
Yeah, the Brits didn't, right?
They
and
are
the
not
Danes,
in the Eurozone.
And the Danes didn't.
Right. And they said, that's silliness. Why are we going to share our hard-earned credit with people that have horrible credit? If you look at the credit rating of the Greeks before they entered the Eurozone, or the Italians before they entered the Eurozone, you're going to find, or Cyprus. What do you call somebody from Cyprus? Is it Cypriotian?
A Cypriot.
A Cypriot? I don't know.
I anyway, think that's what you call them.
They're even smaller than Greece. But if you take their credit rating before they entered the Eurozone and their credit rating after the Eurozone, for them it was a no-brainer. Of course they're going to enter the Eurozone. They get to share in the hard work of all the people that have built their credit up. And now the Germans are going, well, your credit rating was AAA. I don't know why you're having trouble paying this. We loaned you this money, and now you're not paying it to us. And look at all the stuff that we sold to you with the money that we loaned to you. And we made a profit on that end. And we'd really like you to pay this back as well. And that's really the issue here, is that the rich northern European countries saw this as a great way of financing purchases of their highly profitable companies to people that couldn't generally afford it. Sounds a lot like what happened in the credit crisis of the panic of 2008 here.
And for what it's worth, there's a lot of people who seem to think that there's some threat of the United States entering into a credit crisis of that nature, and I can say that they're simply not. For starters, we're not in the Eurozone.
That's a big
Which means
plus.
We have control of our own currency.
We're in the dollar zone.
And the second reason is that the deficit of the United States today is less than the growth in the GDP. Now, what does that mean? That means that taxes grow, that the if you don't change the tax law, then the tax revenues of the United States will grow approximately as fast as the gross domestic product of the United States. That's the profit that gets taxed, in essence. And if our deficit is less than the growth in the GDP, and it is, then our true debt will shrink over time. In other words, we are on a shrink course rather than a shrinkle course, I guess.
A shrinkle.
It's actually not a shrinkle. Shrinkle would be a temporary shrink.
Right. It's just a wrinkle of shrinkage.
Right. And so that is a huge plus. And eventually, we would be in a debt-free situation if this went on long enough. So we're on a good course. The other thing, of course, is that the actual debt outstanding, and that's called debt held by the public for whatever it's worth, of the United States as a percentage of the size of our economy, or even the growth of our economy, is smaller than any developed country on the planet. And that's a huge positive. The most financially healthy economy on the planet, the most financially healthy government on the planet, happens to be the one that we are in. And so there's really, you can point at Greece and say, Greece has this horrible problem, and we don't want the United States to have this horrible problem, and so let's practice austerity. And that's basically what got Europe in the position it's in today, is austerity. But we have to do some commercials. This is the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And on the other side, you're welcome to give us a call, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back. We're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And again, I want to disclaim any relationship with that last advertisement on there about how to get rich quick.
We should just have a disclosure at the beginning that says that we don't approve the advertisements that...
Approve of
the advertisements. They pay Town Square Media a lot of money to be on the air. And the fact that they are on the air during our hour, there's a program I used to watch, Dr. Dean Adele. He's a doctor, and he will often complain about, he would often complain about drugs being,
supplements
being advertised during his program that, and turned red in the face in the process of saying, you can't stop it. And we do the same thing when we're sitting here and we're listening to the advertisements that play during the break and our faces are turning red and
veins are bulging.
And
it's silly.
No.
The fact is, if you try to highly leverage investments like houses,
like
two mortgages,
you're overdoing the one.
And even though he says you can do it with somebody else's money and not have any responsibility, the fact is, you are taking an extremely high-risk position that could easily result, and if it were in securities, he'd have to say this, easily result in your bankruptcy.
Yeah, there's another ad.
And your house being foreclosed on.
There's another ad that plays regularly where they say, we'll teach you how to make money risk-free using the market. All you have to do is this stuff, and there you'll just reap the benefits and no risks. And then immediately after that, followed by really fast-talking guy that says, if you can't afford to lose this money, don't invest it. Risk
right.
is high. So whatever was just said in a slower voice is a lie, and I am the fast voice that's telling you the truth.
Well, at least some of the truth.
At least some of the truth.
Yes, it's the truth that is required by regulators. But you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and that is the truth. And if today is the 30th of May, 2015, then you can give us a call at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Manufacturing.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on... Well, you go ahead.
Okay, manufacturing. All I want to say about manufacturing is, if you're following that, and I do, because it's a critical part of the economy, it's about 8 to 10% of the United States economy as far as economics is concerned, jobs are concerned, and so on. It's actually a bigger piece as far as the total economy is concerned. And the quarterly GDP report came out and said, okay, it's down 0.5%. Well, durable goods down 0.5%. Actually it's not. If you pull out the transportation sector and throw it away, and the reason we do that is because the transportation sector is A, very, very volatile, and B, when you get a new durable good order into Boeing, it is typically 9 years before it impacts the economy. So we could just ignore that for a little while, okay? Then we're actually up 0.5%. It's actually last month that came out for. So this is 2 months in a row, it's up 0.5%. Now, what does that amount to? And that's not annualized 0.5%. That is actually for the month. And I realize that the mathematics is a little different from that, but 0.5% a year means that the durable goods orders are currently rising at an annualized rate of about 6% a year, which is very, very good. It is sustainable. Once you get much higher than that, then you're looking at some point in the future where manufacturing facilities will be overwhelmed and we start to get inflation. So there are, it's just one of those little things I wanted to just throw in that the fact is we have a positive growth, which is redundant, in manufacturing durable good orders in the United States. We're seeing steady growth in manufactured goods in the United States. I'm talking about large items. And any dips that you've seen recently, and there were some, were mainly simply because there was this huge upsurge as companies ordered equipment to do fracking, and they've obviously pulled back on that because the price of oil dropped.
That's a piece that I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
So yeah, go ahead.
So basically, every indicator we have in the economy right now that I follow that is reliable and what we call intermediate term, which is as far out as we can actually get a good forecast, is positive. The United States economy continues to kind of stumble along. And I'm going to add one thing to that. Next year, and I've been saying this for several years now, 2016.
Yeah.
We will almost, and there's no certainty about the future, obviously, but there's a very, very high probability that 2016 will see the United States economy in really good shape, which will really tick off the 16 Republican presidential candidates, and they will be bad-mouthing the economy as hard as they can.
Tough.
And not only is deflation right now depressing consumer spending because they're waiting for lower prices,
right,
which is exactly what deflation does, but the bad-mouthing of the economy, particularly on Fox, the bad mouthing of America and the economy and policies and everything to do with the country because they don't like who's the president.
Right.
And they don't want to say anything nice is hurting the economy. And once we get into 2016, the economy is probably going to turn positive despite all of that.
And that means that whether it's a Republican or a Democrat in office in 2016, they're going to get to look around and see what I did.
Take over to 2017.
2017, but that concept
right, 2017 will probably be a boom year, just like the beginning of Barack Obama's presidency was a disaster year, but he didn't do that, to quote Elizabeth Warren.
Right. It was, yeah. The one of the pieces that we're looking at here is the price of oil. Because the economy runs a lot nicer when the price of oil is low. Our economy, like it or not, derives a lot of the energy that we get from fossil fuels. And one fossil fuel price affects another fossil fuel price. If you've got natural gas out there that's cheaper to burn than coal, it causes the price of coal to go down too, because it's got to be competitive. And we are now at a place where, for the foreseeable future, we are not going to see the price of oil go up very far. In fact, I think it's going to be resting for a pretty good long time. Right now it's about 60, but it's had this upturn.
And it probably will come down to around, I think, closer to 45.
I think 45 is a good number. And the reason for that, there's a lot of reasons for that. Iran and Iraq are both pumping at absolute record numbers. Iraq right now is pumping 26% more oil than it ever has before, ever.
Right.
It's in the middle of fighting a war. Well, Iran is fighting the same war, and they're pumping as fast as they can, and the sanctions are talking about being lifted from Iran, so their oil will be available to more people. And when a threat in the Middle East causes the price of oil to go up, then the already drilled wells in the United States that have been either not producing at high levels or shut down because it costs too much to get up. They just turn a switch. They go back to fracking in the locations, or rewash the location and start fracking again in the same place that they already have. And the oil washes into the market again. So we've got kind of
really sloppy.
A washing of oil. It's
right.
Yes, it's a very oily thing. But the price now, I think, is going to fluctuate between 45 and 65, and it'll stay down closer to the 45 most of the time. And that means that for one component of our economy, and it's a major one, we're going to see some really good use of energy. You throw in one other factor that seems like a tiny thing but winds up being really big, and that's Tesla's Powerwall system. And this is just the first of many. I don't purport to say that the Powerwall is the best of them, but neither did Elon Musk. Elon Musk said everybody needs to be doing this. If we have batteries in our home that can charge during non-peak hours off the grid, don't even need solar for that, just charge during the night and spend it during the day, the cost of our energy will drop. And if the cost of energy is dropping at the same time as the cost of the thing that produces the energy is dropping, we have the ability to create things, to manufacture things at cheaper prices than we ever have before. Robotics is coming online. We are now in the United States manufacturing more things per person than we ever have in the history of the United States. There's a lot less people doing it because we have robots now. So this is all leading to something, and it's not like there's a lot of people that are out of work today because robots took their job. This is a result of either new companies that didn't employ before or companies that existed before having to be retooled and the recession taking the jobs away and then robots coming in to replace them. You opened your mouth like you were going to say something.
Well, that kind of ties into that thing I said earlier, the S&P 500, the Raymond James S&P 500 could hit 4,300 within 9 years. And that basically means a doubling of the value of the stock market, not counting dividends, over the next 9 years. I think that's
quite possible.
And I think we are in, as some economists have suggested, we're in the opening period of a secular bull market. There's going to be bumps along the way. Every indication is there. In other words, we're very, very positive. Let me throw another positive thing in here. I realize all this positive stuff is probably causing people to fall asleep and run off the road.
What is this positivity?
The absence of something very significant over the past several weeks.
Winter.
No. A term being used by Vladimir Putin.
Ah.
Novorussia.
Yeah.
In other words, New Russia. And okay, New Russia, what's that mean? In fact, Catherine the Great used that term, and if you look at the area that she conquered and called it New Russia, and you look at the fact that there was a new Russian parliament being formed a few months ago, and you look at where the boundaries are, and you realize that that means that chunk of Ukraine was just the beginning of what Russia was intending to take. In other words, there's this kind of slice across Eastern Europe that's not Russia today.
That has been Russia in the past in some shape or form.
That was Russia under Catherine the Great. And pretty much coincides with the areas that the Kremlin has suggested are properly Russia, because that's where people speak Russian today. They speak Russian there today because it once was part of Russia. He has dropped that terminology, as have all of the ministers and anyone who's making a public statement in Russia today, in official positions, have dropped the term New Russia from everything they're saying. Additionally, the guy who was sort of a spokesman for the Kremlin, who's part of the Ukrainian rebel resistance or whatever they're called, who was using the term very, very commonly, has also dropped it. He was technically the president of the new Russian parliament, and he said the parliament has been dissolved and will not be reenacted would not be reinstated in the known future. Yeah. And so why is that good news? That means that even though there's fighting still going on the ground in Ukraine, and from just the surface of it, it doesn't look like things have changed very much. It's very
it's like
significant.
An attitude shift.
It's very significant that the leadership in Russia has determined that it is too expensive to do this, and are backing down on their confrontation. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you know this, but for the first time in recent history, Prime Minister Putin actually met with and shook hands with an American official.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of indications that that potential crisis is winding down. The Russians are not going to lose face by surrendering anything, but they are going to throttle back and pull back. And the foreign minister of Russia, who was saying that earlier, that Russia needed to protect the rights of Russian-speaking people in wherever they are in the world, is now saying that the provinces in Ukraine that are occupied by Russian-speaking people and by Russian-speaking and uniformed troops should be reintegrated into a federated Ukraine.
That is the big key.
That is a huge rhetorical de-escalation in what potentially could be a major war.
Yeah, we throw in a couple of other pieces here. One piece doesn't, on the surface, deal a whole lot with Russia, except that the Russians are saying the Americans are only doing this because the Russians have a World Cup scheduled there. But FIFA, the worldwide football, as we would call soccer federation.
Isn't that what the giant said in Jack and the Beanstalk?
No, that's
FIFA.
FIFA. No, it's
FOFAM.
Right. So,
never mind. All right.
We talked about this last week, about how the United States has these laws that say if you're an American citizen or you're using an American corporation and you pay bribes, you're in trouble. You're going to go to jail. And in most of the rest of the world, they actually have line items in their budgets for bribing foreign nationals. If an American company bribes a foreign national in Namibia, the American company and the person that did the bribing is going to be in trouble in America. And FIFA, this world soccer group, has been bribing and being bribed since its beginning. And Europe is kind of afraid to do anything about it. They're afraid to approach FIFA and say, don't do that, because FIFA has a lot of power. The fact that they can say the World Cup is going to be there or there is like this crown jewel in the hat or in the crown, I guess that is a hat, of any of these great nations where they say, I'm going to have the World Cup. And the United States says, we've got a few of those, and none of them are soccer. I don't know why we would want a World Cup in soccer. We tried to bid on it, but seems like there's a lot of corruption going on there. And look. They're using American banks for this corruption. So there was
really fascinating, by the way, that it was the United States of America who uncovered officially the corruption in the Worldwide Soccer Organization.
Right.
They call it a football organization, right, which just shows how screwed up they are.
Right. And there have been a lot of European publications that are all for this. They really enjoy that the United States is doing this. This is very strange. Usually the Europeans say, you should get out of our affairs. In this case, we're the only people that aren't really, we don't have skin in the game. We don't care about soccer enough. So our actions here, the FBI investigation to find the corruption, is being applauded by Europe in great volume, except that Russia is saying, you should get your nose out of this. So you're just saying that because 2018, the Russians have the World Cup. And what that really means is that you're just saying that you should get your nose out of it because we paid a lot of money to get the World Cup in Russia. And that's something, you know, the Olympic Games.
Well, actually, the big money apparently was from companies, one of them in Brazil particularly, that has a major subsidiary in the United States, marketing companies who would pay to get the rights to say who could advertise.
Right. And if you look at the people that are on the board at FIFA, When they join the board, they're millionaires, and when they leave the board, they're billionaires.
Wait a minute.
It sounds like there's Congress. Another...
when they join Congress, they don't have a pot to pee in.
And when they leave, they're multi-millionaires. The fact that Haster is paying off people $3.5 million that he's getting because he was Speaker of the House. And that's not a significant portion of his net worth.
And there's something there, too, that's worth noting. There's a pattern, and the pattern is whatever Dennis Haster did 40 years ago.
It's almost irrelevant at this point.
And since it's with a male and it had to do with athletics and him being a teacher and it had something
Republican,
sexual.
There's all kinds of bad things that could be going on.
Whatever it was, the statute of limitations is long since run.
But he lied to the FBI.
Yeah, and the issue is...
It's not even illegal to pay somebody $3.5 million to be quiet. But if you lie to the FBI about it, it's illegal.
He could have reached a quiet settlement with this person and agreed to pay him $3.5 million. And
could have hired him to do something. There's a lot of things he could have done legally, but instead he said, I'm going to try to hide the fact that I'm paying the guy. I'm going to do it in a way that makes it look like I'm laundering the money, and then I'm going to lie to the FBI about what I'm doing.
And those, finally, that rises to the level of felony. And also calls huge attention to his... whatever the sexual activity was that he was trying to hide.
Right. I'm hiding this, and by doing it, I'm putting it under the spotlight.
Let me throw a couple of little things out here that on top of as we close out the show, the program. This is a kind of astonishing thing. The Government Accountability Office did studies and surveys and came to an interesting conclusion about the changing nature of our economy. Approximately 40% of the workforce in the United States is based on-demand work. In other words, they're contingent workers. And that is something that we've never seen before. In other words, the idea of being hired full-time, you show up every day, you spend a certain amount of hours at work, maybe you put in some overtime. Approximately 40% of the workers in the United States today are in a position where if there is work to do, the employer brings them in. If there's not, they don't. And many of these people have multiple jobs. And it's just a fundamental shift in the economy. That doesn't mean that they're not unemployed, and they're not necessarily making poor wages. It's just a very, very, very fundamental shift in the paradigm.
There's a big group of people. Programmers are one of the major sources for this thing, where they finish a job, and usually a programmer. There's different kinds of programmers. There's programmers that work for one company, and they make the software for that company. That's pretty rare, actually, unless the company is a software company. If it's a bank, they generally don't have a programmer on staff. Mm. They hire a company that comes in and programs. And that company has a staff of programmers that sometimes are working and sometimes aren't. They're getting paid the whole time, but they say, we just got this new job. Such and such company has just hired us to make such and such software. Let's do it.
There's another thing that is, we're almost out of time here, so I might make this quick. And I know this is really esoteric, but I just wanted to mention it. S&P 500 companies are shifting their money from investment to dividend paying or stock buybacks. Now, that sounds backwards. It sounds like, okay, more investment equals more money. But there is a fundamental academic principle that says the more dividends a stock is paying out, the more it is worth. So that would be a suggestion that we'll see a rise in the stock market.
Right.
And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And if you'd like to contact us off the air during the weekend, there's voicemail during the week live. People answer the telephone. We don't have a phone tree. You're welcome to give us a call at locally 947-1111. That's 947-1111. Or
you can reach that same number toll free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, and there's a contact us form there. Or you can listen to podcasts. You can look at our philosophy and methodology. You can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. And we actually look forward to those emails. It gives us great fodder for the show. So until next week, this has been
The Personal Wealth Coach.
Balance, your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.